With that, I'll call the meeting to order. The special meeting of the Derby Inland Wetlands Agency being held on Wednesday, June 9th, 2021. And it's being held electronically and remotely via a Zoom software program. So we just called the meeting to order. The next item on the agenda is the Pledge of Allegiance.
You saying the pledge, Paul?
What's that?
You saying the pledge?
Yeah, I just did.
Oh, I'm sorry. We couldn't hear you.
Oh, okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, liberty and justice for all. There it is.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is the roll call. And there's myself, Paul Denise, Ray Bowers. There's also Jennifer DeRocious, and she's on her phone. And there is also our newly appointed Inland Wetlands Officer, Sarah Carey, and our engineering consultant, Ryan McAvoy. Next item is an application submitted by Gary Lipson, US EPA, for property owner Everready McCallum Company, Inc. Location, 134 Roosevelt Drive, Derby, Connecticut, also known as Lot 1, Tax Map Number 9-4. Purpose of the proposed activity, to eliminate discharges of number 6 fuel oil from the tail race into the Housatonic River. This will be done through the excavation of contaminated tail race sediments, backfilling of tail race with low permeability fill, installation of a sheet pile wall, and installation of an oil recovery trench, upgrading of the sheet pile wall. And just to lay out the proceedings, tonight's meeting is just for an acceptance of the application. We cannot act on it, nor can we really go too far with it, but you could probably give us a brief overview of what you're proposing to do.
All right. We've got a quick introduction, introduce these folks here with me. I'm Gary Lipson. I'm an on-scene coordinator and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency representative at the Roosevelt Drive site. Let these Adam and Kara introduce themselves. They're with Novus, the company that designed our closure plans and who I'll be working with for the remainder of this project.
Sure, I can go. Adam Roy, I'm the project manager for this project. Novus is a contractor to US EPA, and we were contracted to help come up with a solution to stop the oil from entering the river. So we put together this design that we've described in the wetland permit, and certainly happy tonight to answer any questions folks may have.
And my name is Kara Nierenberg. I'm an environmental engineer with Novus, and I've been working with Adam on this plan for a while, specifically related to the permit requirements for the plan.
So Kara put together a really nice PowerPoint. Jennifer, I'm sorry you're on the phone. It's kind of interesting pictures. So it might help if I just put it up, if that's all right with you, Kara, just so I can move the mouse around. Hopefully I can call this up. And when I show the first slide, I'll just kind of give you the quick 2-minute, 5-minute history of this this site. It's actually pretty extensive. Can you guys see that?
Not yet, no.
Not yet.
No? Afraid that was gonna happen.
The whole host may have to give you the ability to share.
Mark, if you can hear us, would you be able to give Gary the ability to share?
Yes, he has it.
Okay.
I do, all right.
There we go.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay, you good?
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. All right. So EPA first got involved in 1994. There was a release into the river, an ongoing release of oil reported to the EPA from the state of Connecticut, the DEP at the time, coming out of this section of the bank right here. This whole site, 134 Roosevelt Drive. This was a facility built at the turn of the century, very late 1800s. It was a hydro plant from its inception. There's a canal right across Route 34 right here, or Roosevelt Drive. This canal starts from the Housatonic River just upstream above the first dam in Lake Housatonic. Historically, the water we get to this point, there are two underground pipes under the road right here that fed the turbines and power units inside this structure. The water would, after powering the turbines and generators, it would flow out through the bottom into this tail race and out into the river. They had not been operating here. These more recent residents that kind of built this power plant, they had not been operating for all that long when this sheen started appearing out in the river here. So the EPA with the Connecticut DEP did a lot of work here. They excavated this entire bank, pulled out many thousands of gallons of oil, oil-soaked sediment. They actually put in a trench underground, following my cursor right here. There's a well that actually goes into the subsurface in this little shed right here that, since we built this thing in 1995, has been slowly collecting oil out of the ground. So after that, the oil was stopped. This whole area is clean fill right in here. They kept operating as a hydro facility for a couple of years. Oil started coming out again. EPA got involved again. This time oil was coming out of the tail race with the water that was being discharged from the turbines. They did a lot of investigation, and I see they, DEP and the EPA, and they realized that the source of the spill was actually on the other side of the building. Historically, there had been a 500,000 gallon number 6 oil tank back there, just north of this picture, along with the day tank. Upon investigation, they realized that the day tank was just full of holes, had leaked oil for unknown amount of time. You know, back in the day when oil was cheap, the boilers weren't particularly efficient. I don't think they missed X number of gallons flowing into the ground every day. So we, soon after that, we actually had them shut down the hydro facility. It just wasn't working anymore where they could produce power by running water through there, because every time they ran water through, it would pick up oil and discharge the river. So let's fast forward a number of years. Extremely complicated site. If you're familiar with this area, there's about a 6 to 7 foot tidal surge. We're right below the first dam. So this water fluctuates 6 to 7 feet a few times a day, further complicated by a large bluff on this side of the road above the canal that messes with the groundwater flow. So it's a very complicated subsurface in this area. We've been trying for a long time how to figure out how to stop the oil from coming in. We've got a lot of wells peppered throughout this property, both inside the building and outside, that show oil has migrated under the sidewalk and along the perimeter subsurface in front of the building. Oil has migrated under the building and gotten into the tail race in between some very thick and large granite blocks down there that comprise this whole raceway. A number of years ago, we actually installed this dam right here. This is simply a dam that was made out of the very large sandbags, kind of cubic yard bags covered with riprap. This was just to prevent any water, any oil from just continuously seeping out into the river. Their water just still fluctuate with the tide inside the tail race, but there's a delay as the water has to get through the ground now. Years ago, we actually installed a horizontal well that went under horizontally the entire building to try to remediate the site. It goes into the ground roughly over here and exits about 300 feet on the other side of the building. That was not particularly successful. We had a lot of problems with the oil that was coming out of the ground. So fast forward, we worked with the Coast Guard. And if you're not aware, the U.S. Coast Guard is the agency that handles the oil fund. Unlike EPA that pays for Superfund or toxic waste cleanup, the Coast Guard actually handles the funding for any oil projects. So we're working with the Coast Guard. Nobis, who these folks are with, they looked at a couple of options of whether trying to rehab this plant and get it to a point where it could actually operate. Nobody really wanted to stop the operation. We could use all the clean, called clean power that we can get. So it's a shame to shut down a hydro plant, but there are so many complications and logistics and the cost of getting this back online and still preventing oil from getting in the river. And there was never the guarantee that oil would not come out again in the future. So we decided on the option of shutting it down. So the plan we're working on now is to effectively close this plant. We'll not leach any more oil into the river. That's the mandate of the Oil Pollution Act. That's what Coast Guard looks for when they're funding a project, that there is no nexus to a waterway from oil. So getting into a couple of details now, I mentioned these two pipes that run underground. The first major part of this project was accomplished already. We filled these two large pipes with a flowable fill concrete. In the case, because there's no water running through them anymore, it's sealed off at the canal. We didn't want there ever to be the chance that these pipes would corrode underground. They're solid steel pipes, but given time, they could easily corrode under the highway. So by filling them with concrete, we're going to prevent any erosion under the ground or, you know, undermining the road. So that was the first step. The next thing we're planning on doing is where we have our dam right now, installing metal sheet piling, going from basically this wall, cutting across where the wall is, effectively cutting off the tail race from the river and continuing in the ground surface up into the retaining wall against the road. Once that sheet pile is in, then we excavate everything inside of it. And you'll see some pictures following this, very oily sediment. And we'll basically fill that whole space with a flowable fill to make it a solid monolith inside. The project will be graded, it'll be seeded, and it won't look like anything from the river. You'll see some riprap that goes up against the wall right here. And this wall will be seeded and leveled out with this lower slope here. So let me go through some, so this is from the site looking out to the river. The tail race is just off to the right here. You could just see the edge of it. And the shed, the two sheds that you see, the shed with the orange roof is the one that houses about a 13-foot well that goes into the ground right here that's been pulling oil up from the ground. And the shed next to it is to house the pump that we use to get the oil out of the ground via that horizontal well I was talking about. This is another view looking downstream from basically just above the tail race. This shed right here actually houses something we had hanging into the tail race. It was a tube specially designed to collect oil. So as the oil would build up in the tail race, as it seeped through the walls, this tube would collect the oil, bring it up a pulley and deposit it into a tank that we would dispose of periodically. So this is looking at the tail race from this rock wall that I'm talking about. You could see a little bit of just murky oil sitting on the top. You actually see the oil stains on the wall on the left of at a higher tide, the way the oil has just smeared the walls. So this is when we've dewatered this tail race on a number of occasions, trying to figure out the cause or the source of the oil, where it's coming in. We wanted to look at the interior of the tail race to see if we could possibly rehab this and bring it back to a working condition. One of our problems was that there was no leeway. If we were able to pour, let's say, another 2 feet of concrete on the floor of this and have these turbines operate, that might have solved the problem. But because you need a certain amount of space where the water dumps into the tail race from the turbines to get the maximum efficiency from it, that would be cutting off too much space and you'd have no more efficiency left in the system. So we really had no options of fixing the floor in there and making it workable. So this is the sediment that we're talking about scooping out not very deep. We're just looking to get the very oily material on the surface of this raceway, get it out of there. So when we pour in the concrete, there's a much better adhesion to the surface material in there, and it's not getting caught up in the oil. So again, huge fluctuation in tide. This is just looking in the same direction from the same point in the site. And you're looking at the tail race in the upper right. So this is the site plan that Novus engineered. And this is the crux of what we're talking about here. The dark line is where the sheet pile is gonna go over the existing riprap and then onto the lawn and up to the wall where it intersects Roosevelt Drive. This is the tail race in here that we're talking about excavating a little bit of material from. That material will be dried, cleaned if possible, and shipped off site for disposal. This tail race would then be filled probably from up above here with a flowable fill material. And then again, this whole site will be graded. What we're doing in addition, if this ever leaches out through this material to the river, it's gonna be an awfully long time. But I didn't want anybody to be surprised 10, 20, 30 years from now by oil coming out. So what you see in red here, we're installing a large trench with manholes that's gonna be a very passive oil collection trench, still on the inside of the sheet pile. So that could be checked periodically by whomever, by the city of Derby, by an owner of the property. They could simply peek in these manholes and see if there's any floating oil on the surface, and it could be mopped up with a vacuum, with snare or pom-poms, any material, absorbent material for oil. So it's just a way of checking that no oil has leached through this property and gotten to the wall. Even if it has, I don't think it's ever gonna break through this the sheet pile wall, but it's kind of just a double check to make sure that this is gonna be stable for it, you know, for our many lifetimes. So that's kind of the big view. We're all here, I guess, to answer any questions and see where you guys wanna go from here.
Have you got this information over to Ryan?
The application includes the site plans that have been shown. They don't have the photos. So Gary, if you could be kind enough to email those over to us, that way we can have that as part of the record.
All right. Cara, are you able to do that? Can you also
email me the PowerPoint?
Yeah, that's essentially what.
Yeah, Cara, are you able to do the mailings?
Yep, not a problem. If we can just get everyone's email addresses afterwards, I can send that out.
You could just send it to the office and we can make sure.
It's better to go through staff and then we send it to the commission members.
Perfect. I'll send it to Lisa and she can distribute it.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect.
So are we kind of saying that those turbines could never be used again?
Oh, they're done. The turbines were removed from the property a few months ago and shipped to somebody that wanted to use them on another project.
Okay.
So this is a completely defunct hydroelectric plant from here on in.
Okay. After the Coast Guard put all that money into it.
So do we know what a prospective use for the in the future of the building might be?
No, we don't know. Right now, the owner is renting out space for storage. I believe there's a car, somebody that works on cars that's located in a place in the building. So there's no extended look at what's going to happen to the property in the future. I have given the mayor of Derby and a few of his assistants a tour of the project. So they're kind of aware of where we are in this.
Now, Gary or one of your folks from Novus, I see in your plans, you reference some environmental, sort of wetland delineation or something to that effect by Soil Science and Environmental Services. Did they prepare a wetland delineation report for this or any sort of documentation of their findings on the site?
I believe so. I'll have to check in the file. It's been a little while since we went through the whole design phase, but I believe we did get someone in there to do some wetland delineation. So like we could pass along that report as well.
Right. You say your jurisdictional wetlands were found in the subject parcel based on an inspection made by Soil Science and Environmental Services from October of 2019.
Yeah. So
if they prepared a report, one of the things we look for as part of just from a procedural perspective is where are the jurisdictional wetlands? Now, obviously the tail race itself, there's a question about whether or not that constitutes a wetland or water course based on state statutes. Hold on one second. Sorry, my kids were making a ruckus. So the question that I think we would have, and I think that's important for the commission to understand, is if filling the tail race, which certainly sounds like it has its merits, whether that would constitute a regulated activity in and of itself. Certainly the sheet piling wall, the dry wells, and the work within 50 feet of the Housatonic River are regulated by this agency. Anything within 50 feet of the Housatonic River and the water course are regulated by this agency. So it's really a question about what specifically they are sort of being asked to approve, whether or not the tail race constitutes a water course from a technical perspective.
What are they going to do with the sheds? Are they going to remove the sheds?
Yes, we're removing the sheds. That'll probably happen. Some of it may happen next week. Removing the sheds and the equipment and filling in those the wells.
Okay.
And the riprap slope that you're looking to put down on the access from Route 34, will this area need to be accessed in the future? It seems like that would not necessarily want to be a riprap slope.
You're talking this area right here, right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, we've used this area as is plenty of times up and down with the proper equipment, with attract equipment. So whatever we put down there is going to have to be stable enough to be used a number of times.
Right. I just it seems like that if that's riprap, it would be awfully difficult to get up and down.
Oh, it wouldn't be riprap. It wouldn't be anything more than an inch or two stone at the most.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Just the plans refer to riprap armored slope for restoration using intermediate riprap. So that would be.
Adam, maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Do you remember?
I'd have to look and see what we specced out for up there. I don't think it wasn't large riprap. That's for sure. Cause we did want to be able to access it in the future exactly. With equipment for the, the recovery trench there with the thought that we'd have to get equipment down that slope at some point. So I don't think it was going to be like large 4 to 6 inch riprap. I don't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah,
the size
agreed.
Of the stone.
No, we've got to leave it accessible.
I would just check that because intermediate riprap is typically a 12 inch diameter stone. So that's not exactly part of my review from a wetland perspective, but that's something to keep in mind. Okay. Paul, do you have any other questions?
Are there any other regulatory agencies you have to appear before or apply to with regard to this project?
We are getting a permit from the DOT for accessing this exact area. And for a guardrail, we've got to temporarily remove a section of guardrail when we're accessing this slope. So we're working with, I've already spoken with DOT a number of times and we're working on their permit.
And we'll also be submitting permits to the Army Corps of Engineers, a general remediation. As well as we'll have per the plan, a NPDES discharge permit for the dewatering water that we'll create.
Yeah, I didn't mention it. We'll have a water treatment system on site. So as we're dewatering, anytime we dewater, it'll go through the treatment system, be tested before we discharge, make sure hits all the state NPDES permit levels.
So the WPCA pump station, right, isn't too far down the road from that. Is that going to cause any effect to that?
It shouldn't. I mean, this is simply a self-contained water treatment unit on site, just consisting of some filters and frac tanks, or basically big boxes just to hold the water and let it settle. So it's self-contained. It shouldn't have anything to do with any city pumping systems.
Okay.
And with respect to the sheet pile wall, your plans do reference, refer to profiles and details. I think it would be helpful as part of this application, since it is within the regulated area of the river, at least, that plan be provided along with the details associated with the drywells, just so that there's a complete record on what you're doing within 50 feet of the water course.
Sure, we can send over the full set of drawings from the plan.
Will the sheet pile extend above existing grade, or will it be relatively flush with existing grade?
Adam, you can chime in. I'm pretty sure it's flush with grade.
Yeah, it will be flush at some point. I don't know. I know the detailed drawings show that, Ryan, when you see those.
So what I'm going to do, I'll review this a little bit more thoroughly and put my comments down in writing and provide those to you, hopefully within a week. But I think the gist is kind of what we just talked about now, is that providing documentation from Soil Science and Environmental Services, provide the details associated with the sheet pile wall. Also we're gonna ask that the plans reflect the limits of the wetlands, which you show, but also the limits of a 50-foot upland review area, which are also areas regulated by this agency. And a summary of the square footage of impact within that 50-foot area, along with if the tail race is indeed a regulated water course, that the removal of that water course square footage be documented for the record as well.
Carrie, you good with the 50-foot delineation? You're mute.
Sorry. Yeah, we could add that onto our figures without a problem. And I know we looked at, I feel like for this application, we looked at the total area impacted. And I think it was something like a tenth of an acre. I mean, we can give you a more finite answer. But.
Right. Those are just, square footage of regulated activities, areas. between the wetlands and the 50-foot upland reviewer, along with any disturbance actually within a wetland or a water course, just need to be stated for the record. So that way any approval if granted by this agency reflects that those figures.
Got it.
Paul, do you see anything else?
No, I don't have any other questions at this point.
Ray, Jennifer?
No, I think pretty good.
So if everything is to your satisfaction, you get what you need and you guys are okay, what is your time frame?
Well, we're required by state statute to wait for at least a 15-day period, so that if anyone from the public wants to submit a petition to require a public hearing, they can do so. So we will schedule this application for our next meeting, which is July 14th. And at that point, we could possibly take action on it.
Okay. I'm asking because we've got a lot up in the air right now. Our contractors are getting bids from subs for the sheet pile work. So we're trying to get them on site. We've got a lot of work to do that we're hoping to do this calendar year. So we'll be looking to schedule them, I guess, the second half of July then, as soon as possible. And hopefully things work out with your committee.
I think it is so far, right? I think, you know, the remediation is a good thing.
And Mr. Chairman, is there any desire from what you've heard tonight to schedule a public hearing based on the information received?
Well, I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for Jennifer or Ray. I don't see it at this point. But again, we are bound. There's the possibility that the public may petition for a public hearing. I don't see much interest here tonight from anyone in the public. The meeting was posted, but.
Paul, that 15 days you mentioned, from when? From now or from your next meeting?
From today.
Oh, okay, all right, great.
So just so you understand, that the state statute requires that an application is quote unquote received. That's the technical term for what tonight is, received at the next regularly scheduled meeting after the application submitted. So it was submitted in the end of May. This is the first meeting subsequent to that submission. And then upon receipt being today, the public has 14 days of which they can gather 25 signatures to force the application to go to public hearing. Now, I can tell you that hardly ever happens, but if the agency were to say approve it tonight, and that petition did come in after the fact, it would be a pretty messy legal problem.
Right. So it's a shame. I wish we knew about this a while ago, because we obviously would have had this hearing at your last meeting or two meetings ago to get the start of it. I don't think we realized it was just the month in between. So.
Paul, would there be, since there's really not a whole lot of items on the agenda, would there be any appetite to hold a special meeting?
I don't have an issue with a special meeting, but I can't answer for the other commission members.
No, I don't have an issue with
no
it.
No problem.
No, if it's an opportunity to keep this process moving, I'm open to that. So perceivably, we could have one in 15 days. Is that right? Or 16 days?
Yes.
How about tentatively speaking, 2 weeks is the 23rd. June 24th is a possibility, which is a Thursday, or June 30th, a Wednesday.
6/24 works. That sort of buys us another week or another few business days anyways.
Okay. Jennifer and Ray, are you available on the 24th?
Yep, that's fine.
I'm available.
Ryan?
I can make myself, I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I'm sure I can make myself available, especially if we do 6 o'clock by Zoom. Mark, are you able to accommodate that date?
How long, I mean, I know it's a tricky question, but do you expect it to be a lengthy meeting, like more than an hour?
I would think it would be. Probably on an order of magnitude similar to this tonight.
Yeah, 45 minutes, Mark.
Okay. Yeah, we can work. We might have to do a different login because the Board of Aldermen, depending on what the Board of Aldermen usually meets that night at 7, their second regular meeting, but sometimes they have committee meetings, but we'll work it out. Well, we can work it out, you know, as long as they know ahead.
Or it might be possible to meet at 5:30. I don't know how everybody feels about that.
No, I mean, whatever time works, as we get closer, we'll have to just, you keep, the thing is, there's a restraint on the, you can only have one meeting at a time. So we have two accounts, so we can, if it happens, they're both going on. I just need to know, so we set up the right login for everybody. So as long as I know, we know ahead, and, you know, obviously I'll know, you know, a few days before that.
Well, whatever works best for you.
So why don't we tentatively schedule then for the Thursday, the Well, what do you say? What date was it, Paul? The 24th?
24th.
6:24 at 6 o'clock.
Or 5:30.
Yeah, I can do 5:30.
Okay. Schedule up for 5:30.
Excellent. Guys, thank you. Thank you so much. That is really appreciated. So thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, and you can expect to get a letter from me with my comments, hopefully no later than a week from today, but hopefully sooner.
Ryan, is that enough? That's like the 15th day, is that?
Well, it's actually, the statutes are 14 days from receipt. So other communities in Connecticut that meet twice a month have no legal issues with receiving an application and then acting on it 2 weeks later. So I know there's certainly other towns where that happens frequently.
Okay, just as long as that meets what you need to meet.
Yep.
Do we need to formally accept this proposal?
No, it's received by statute today.
Okay.
So even if you didn't meet today for some reason, if you couldn't have a quorum or if, you know, there were technical difficulties and the meeting couldn't be held, it would still be received today per state statute.
Okay. Okay. So we're all set?
All set.
Yep.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Adam, I'll call you and Kara tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds good, Gary. We'll talk.
And we will send over the files to Lisa tomorrow also, so you guys will have them for review.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good night. Bye.
And bye-bye. For everybody else, we still have a few items on our agenda.
Okay.
Number 5 is the public portion of the meeting. I don't see anyone else from the public in our Zoom meeting room, so I guess we'll dismiss that. Approval of prior meeting minutes. I'm not aware of any that were forwarded to us. And finally, we have payment of bills. And I'm in receipt here of a number of invoices. I've got invoice number 153688 from Ryan, and that's for the amount of $732. That was for 35 Bellevue Drive. I have another invoice for 153693. That's for a total of $437.50. That was for miscellaneous technical support. We have invoice 154859 for the amount of $270. That was to prepare and attend a February meeting, coordinate with prospective home buyers on wetland related matters. We have invoice 154861. That's for $38 concerning the Socini property at 35 Bellevue Drive. We have invoice 156000. That's for $180. That's for miscellaneous support, technical support. And then the last invoice is 157190. And that's for the amount of $135. And that's also for miscellaneous technical support.
And I would say that a lot of in the past few months, in the absence of a wetland enforcement officer, there have been some wetland related matters that have come to City Hall's attention, including some prospective applicants for doing work on their property that I helped coordinate with. I don't know that they're gonna move forward, but if anyone's curious about the nature of the invoices, relatively small amounts, but still invoices over the last few months, it's been essentially guiding homeowners as they seek approval for activity on their property. But now that we have a wetland enforcement officer, Sarah, hopefully those will stop or at least lessen.
Okay, is there a motion to pay the bills?
I'll make a motion to pay the bills.
I second it.
All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and let's see. Well, we have no other agenda items, and we'll set up the meeting for the 24th. And I think that's about it.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Is there a second, Jennifer?
I second. Yep, I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, members, for attending.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.